This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Award-winning author, historian, and cartographer, he's online at rickbritton.com. His latest book is A Monticello Sampler, award-winning book, and we are exploring the top 25 battles of the Civil War that took place in Virginia.
Yeah, most significant
battles. Most significant battles. And right. We do one major battle a week.
Right. We started off trying to do two.
It was
too hard.
Yeah. So we're, and now what we're looking at is maybe doing this next battle, we may do two parts this week and next week because it's Chancellorsville and it's huge, right?
Yeah, it's huge. It's a big one. People consider it to be Robert E. Lee's masterpiece. I mean, it's brilliant. It's a brilliant study in military science.
Yeah. What we'll do is we'll give some context to that, and then we'll talk about it. Before we do that, though, remind us what you have going on at the Senior Center.
At the Senior Center, we've got this lecture, Civil War lecture and day trip series, and every month we have a free talk, and that takes place tomorrow, which is Wednesday, August 18th, at the Senior Center at 6 p.m. It's a great speaker. He's come up many times before to talk for us. He's a really great guy, Colonel Keith Gibson, and he's the Director of Museum Operations at VMI. And his topic is one that he specializes in. It's the Virginia Military Institute in the Civil War. So if that interests you, come on by tomorrow, the Senior Center at 6 o'clock. It's absolutely free. But then a week from tomorrow, August 25th, we're going to go down and see VMI and see Lexington, and we've got some great things lined up. We're going to visit the Jackson House, the Stonewall Jackson House. We're going to walk down the street from there and see where he was laid to rest, and we're also going to visit Lee Chapel and see Robert E. Lee's final resting place, and then, of course, as I mentioned, take in the VMI Museum, and they've got some great Stonewall Jackson memorabilia, aside from all the other great things. Like, for example, they've got Little Sorrel there, his horse stuffed, the slicker.
It really is the horse?
It's his horse. It's Little Sorrel, yeah. This is something people used to do. And remember in the news just the other day, Roy Rogers' horse, Trigger, was sold, stuffed, because they're closing the Roy Rogers Museum.
Rick, what do they stuff him with?
You know,
old newspapers?
Beats
or?
Me. Maybe old newspapers, yeah. Like I don't know. No, probably not old newspapers.
Like padding or?
I really
is it like
don't.
Is it like blown insulation or something?
Or maybe it's horsehair. I don't know what they
I
stuff
have no
them
idea.
With.
But maybe anyway, somebody's listening who knows, because I don't.
Yeah, they can call us in. And they've also got the black slicker that Jackson was wearing, and we're going to talk about that in a moment, when he was mortally wounded at the Battle of Chancellorsville in May of 1863. And lots of the uniform he was wearing at First Manassas, which is a federal uniform, a U.S. Army uniform. They've just got some amazing stuff. So if you're interested, call down the travel office at the Senior Center. It's 974-6538. Or you can get all the information about this month's events and next month, September, and into October at www.seniorcenterinc.org.
We're talking with Rick Britton at 22 minutes before the hour of 5 p.m. here in Central Virginia. It's 91 degrees in Charlottesville. You're listening to News Radio 1070 WINA. So Chancellorsville is when?
Chancellorsville took place between May 1st and 4th, 1863.
So we're into close to beginning the third year of the war then,
close
right?
to beginning the third year of the war. We're at number 12. This is number 12 on our list of the top 25, so we're right smack dab in the center. Following the fiasco at Fredericksburg, and another fiasco. It just pointed out that poor Ambrose Burnside was just not a competent commander. He had
And he was Lincoln's new pick to lead the Union Army.
After
McClellan failed to get to Richmond by way of the Norfolk and coming up through Williamsburg. And Burnside tries to come south and make a head-on attack on Richmond but never gets through Fredericksburg.
Never makes it through Fredericksburg. And disastrous assault, 11,000 federal casualties, killed, wounded, and captured, really for nothing, versus about 5,000 Confederate casualties. A total fiasco, probably worse than also as bad as the casualties was he had wrecked the morale of the Army. I mean, you know, when guys are ordered to do something that everybody can tell is hopeless, the guys don't tend to to believe in you. They lose faith in you. And so he had wrecked the morale. So in comes Joseph Hooker, Fighting Joe Hooker. Hooker was something of a braggart, drank a lot, caroused a lot, you know, played cards, but he had made a...
Carouse, that has something to do with women?
Carouse with women. Yeah, we're going okay. we're gonna get to that a little bit later.
I love that word. Yeah, to carouse.
he caroused. And, but he was a fighter. He had made a fairly decent name for himself. He had been to West Point. He had been breveted in the Mexican War. He came up through the ranks, started off as a colonel, became a brigadier general, major general of volunteers. And he had been one of the main proponents and actually breaking military law by writing directly to Abraham Lincoln. You know, you're supposed to go through the chain of command, writing directly to Abraham Lincoln that Burnside is just not going to cut the mustard. We need to get rid of him. So despite this, and Lincoln wrote an amazing letter to him telling him this, despite this, Hooker was promoted to command following, Burnside. Now, Hooker did an amazing job of rebuilding the army in the late winter and the very early spring of 1863. Probably surprised a lot of folks. He grouped the cavalry together into one corps. The cavalry in the past had been kind of frittered away on all these small details. He's credited with forming the real cavalry corps that later on did well, and we're going to get to a battle right after this where the cavalry did okay for the first time in the East against the Confederate riders, against Jeb Stuart. That's the Battle of Brandy Station. We're going to talk about that next. So he did a good job with the cavalry. He instituted corps badges. He did a lot of things. He brought in the bread ration again with ovens so that the men could get fresh bread every day. He built the morale back up. So we get to
May. And built the army, too. I mean, it sounds
and
like
rebuilt
he
the army.
Really
well,
had
the
a different
army,
way of thinking about
the,
it.
The army had really been hurt, and especially the morale of the army. Desertions were at an all-time high, so he put a cordon around the army. So that the men couldn't just walk away from the army, you know, get on the railroad and go back home. A lot of things that he instituted. He rebuilt the Army of the Potomac. So they had kind of a new spring in their step. And so here comes the spring of 1863. So here's the military situation. The Army of the Potomac is on the north side of the Rappahannock River. It's about 135,000 men strong. All arms, infantry, artillery, and cavalry. Robert E. Lee, because of his situation, had been forced to send away two of his divisions and General Longstreet. So he's down to about 60,000 men, and he's still in those fortifications just behind Fredericksburg. So he's on the southern, along the southern bank of the Rappahannock. So Hooker comes up with a really great plan. And to tell you this plan, I'm going to have to describe the terrain basically in and around Fredericksburg and to the west. The Rappahannock River flows west to east, coming down out of the Blue Ridge Mountains to Fredericksburg. Then at Fredericksburg, it takes kind of a southeasterly turn. So it's more south than east right there. And Robert E. Lee, of course, is behind that and behind the town of Fredericksburg. Due west of Fredericksburg, via the Plank Road, about 10 miles away, is the little crossroads of Chancellorsville.
And that's Route 3 today, right?
Route 3 today, yeah. Absolutely right. A lot of people are confused about the name. They think there was a town there. There wasn't really a town there. It was Chancellorsville because it was settled by the Chancellor family. So the Chancellor family house was there, and it's this large mansion. So that is Chancellorsville. That's about it. Inside of a large clearing. There was no town at Chancellorsville. People are kind of confused about that. So here's Hooker's plan. He's going to leave about 40,000 men under Sedgwick opposite Robert E. Lee at Fredericksburg. So the idea is to kind of keep his attention there and pin him and take the balance of his army along the north bank, upstream, up the Rappahannock, cross the Rappahannock and the Rapidan, and then coming down roads from the north once he's on the same side of the river as Robert E. Lee, focus on Chancellorsville, and then advance to the east along the Plank Road. Now, once he's at Chancellorsville with, say, 75,000 men, Robert E. Lee is in a pickle. He's got 40,000 men in front of him, but he's got a much larger force than his in his left rear.
Yeah.
And he's only got a few choices in this kind of situation. He can retreat to Richmond. If he retreats to Richmond, that force of 75,000 under Hooker is poised to attack him in flank as he retreats. And it's always hard to retreat in the face of the enemy, in the proximity of the enemy, because your baggage trains, your ordnance trains.
Well, that's how it ended with Lee running to Appomattox.
Exactly right. Yeah. All of that is exposed, yeah. And it's hard to protect because an army on the march gets very attenuated, gets very strung out. So it's very difficult to do that in the face of the enemy. So he can retreat. He can turn and fight, try to fight Hooker. He can remain at Fredericksburg, which, of course, is the worst option, because then Hooker is going to march along the plank road and end up immediately behind him, and he would be caught between the head of a vice, in a pincers.
And they just choke him out.
And just wipe out his army. So, kind of typical of Robert E. Lee, he chose the most audacious, and that was to leave 10,000 men in Fredericksburg to face Sedgwick's 40,000 and march with the remaining 50,000 to fight Joseph Hooker in the wilderness. Now,
we're talking with local historian Rick Britton. It's about 14 minutes in front of the hour of 5 o'clock here in Central Virginia. Rick Britton, let's continue our conversation. We are exploring the top 25 most significant battles of the U.S. Civil War that took place here in Virginia. Today and next week, we are talking in detail about the Battle of Chancellorsville.
Right.
And it's very interesting because it sounds like Hooker's trying to do what Burnside tried to do, and that is ultimately take Fredericksburg and get Lee out of Fredericksburg, right?
Yeah. I guess you could say really the most important thing is to pry Robert E. Lee out of that amazing defensive position behind Fredericksburg. It's not so much to take Fredericksburg, although taking the town gives you the crossing there. But
can
of course,
this?
They had pontoon.
Why didn't they just come down through like Madison and Culpeper and just cut across to Louisa into Richmond? You see what I mean? Why didn't they just cut through central part of in a big arc down through maybe even Charlottesville towards Richmond, because everybody was up around Fredericksburg?
Well, eventually that's something that's tried. But one thing you have to remember is the route of the railroads. So this army sitting outside of Fredericksburg, this huge federal army, is being supplied by the railroad directly from Washington, D.C.
So they didn't have supply lines to do that.
So you always have to think about supply lines. On the map, you can always see alternate routes. But the big question, the next question is, but to move a large force, basically a large city back then, 135,000 men, how do I supply them? How do I feed them?
Okay.
Yeah, so that's the big question.
So Hooker says, let's go upriver across Chancellorsville.
No, cross up river beyond Chancellorsville, cross the Rappahannock and the Rapidan,
and then come down
astride the plank road. And at that point, he's in Robert E. Lee's immediate left rear, only 10 miles away. So you were asking about whether he wanted to take Fredericksburg. More importantly, he wants to get Robert E. Lee away from that defensive position. And once they're out in the open, once they have an open field battle where the Confederates aren't behind incredibly powerful defensive positions, then he's got an advantage in numbers.
Hooker does. The Union Army does.
And so that's the goal here is to get him to pry him away from that defensive
position.
But Lee
knows that Hooker's doing this. That's what's so interesting is they usually know what the other side is doing.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. And lots of times they're reading each other's newspapers.
Yeah.
So, you know, the newspapers out of Washington, D.C. and New York are being smuggled into the Confederacy. Robert E. Lee's reading those.
And the newspapers are reporting these strategies and reporting the locations of the...
Sometimes. But a little bit later on into the war, Ulysses S. Grant had some of the reporters thrown out of the army. And just after this, they made sure that the reporters who sent dispatches back to their newspapers had to sign them, so that they could actually find somebody, they could actually locate the person who was sending back information that was a little bit too sensitive that the enemy could use.
So for at least the first 2 years of the war, the reporters were compromising the efforts of
both sides. On both sides, so it's about equal.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it kind of balances out.
Interesting.
That great media, the fifth column, right? Always doing its best.
We're talking with Rick Britton. We have a few minutes left here, and we're going to, this is part A of Chancellorsville.
This is part A.
You
this
mentioned the wilderness. A. This battle takes place in the wilderness, but there's another battle called the wilderness.
It is, and the reason I mentioned that is so you'd ask that question. I'm glad you asked it. Yeah, this could easily have been called First Wilderness, and what we call the wilderness today could have been the Second Wilderness almost exactly a year later in a very similar location right nearby.
Yeah.
But the reason I brought that up is so that you get an idea of what that terrain looks like around Chancellorsville. It's just sporadic clearings, but mostly heavily, heavily wooded with thick underbrush and paths and, you know, dirt tracks and cow tracks and just a few large roads like the Plank Road.
Yeah.
So those became incredibly important. And then, of course, those open fields, whatever open fields they were, they became the only places that you could use artillery. So they became very, very important.
Yeah. The poor Chancellor family held up in their house. Were they there?
The poor Chancellor.
Did they survive?
For a while, but then they got out. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can imagine being in the middle of a couple hundred thousand guys.
A war comes to your backyard.
Yeah. It's not the time to stick around.
Yes.
You grab the chickens and the goats and you head out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So set up part B for us now. We're going to talk about the actual battle next week.
Right.
But set this up for us and paint the scene of when and what happened.
Okay, so Robert E. Lee, remember, left 10,000 men to face the 40,000 opposite him at Fredericksburg and then marched with the remaining 50,000 west along the Plank Road. He encounters, just east of Chancellorsville, he encounters the Federal skirmishers and drives them in. He gets, in typical Robert E. Lee fashion, he's very aggressive against them. And in that moment, Hooker, who was close to the front with his men, to his credit, unlike McClellan oftentimes, decided to pull back in and take a defensive stance. And in that moment, he lost the campaign of Chancellorsville. He had the initiative. He was making Robert E. Lee react to what he did, not the other way around. But in the moment that he decided to take up a defensive position, almost a semicircular position, in those heavy woods around Chancellorsville, he gave up the initiative. And so basically he's waiting for Robert E. Lee to take the next move. And Robert E. Lee does, in typical audacious fashion, with Stonewall Jackson leading a flanking march. And that's what we'll talk about. That's what we'll talk about next week.
And right up there, isn't there some out on Route 3, isn't there a marker to Stonewall Jackson?
There is.
Is that where he died or where he lost his arm or something?
There's a marker where he was...
Where Route 20
where he,
and...
where
and
he
Route
was mortally 3. Wounded, right. It's right nearby there. In fact, it's right near where the visitor center, the Chancellorsville Visitor Center is. That's where he was mortally wounded, right nearby. In fact, just north of that visitor center, but we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves a little bit. What's really neat about this is that he starts off with an amazing plan. It's one of the best federal plans and certainly better than the plan adopted by Burnside just a few months earlier.
To take Fredericksburg head on.
Yeah, to take Fredericksburg head on and attack those fortifications on the ridges just beyond Fredericksburg. So he came up with a great plan, and the execution of the plan starts off really well too. So it seems like he's in tall cotton. He's doing a great job against Robert E. Lee until Robert E. Lee drives in his skirmishers and comes up very aggressive against him along the Plank Road. Then he pulls back. And in that moment...
So what should he have done? Hooker should have said, charge.
He should have fought him. He should have spread his army out and tried to find a flank of Robert E. Lee's and attack him. At that moment, he was facing Robert E. Lee with 50,000 men. And at that moment, he had close to 70,000 men.
Hooker did, yeah.
He should have fought him right there.
So this is one of those great what-ifs of the Civil War.
Right.
If Hooker had not pulled back into a defensive position
it would
taken
be totally,
Robert
it would,
E. Lee...
It would have been totally different.
This war could have been over in 63.
Yeah, now he could have also lost that battle too, right? He could have lost that battle too against Robert E. Lee.
Yeah.
Yeah, east of Chancellorsville.
So next week... This battle in detail, what happened? Because it went on for days, right?
It went on for a few more days. It absolutely did, yeah.
The Battle of Chancellorsville, part two, next week with Rick Britton. Rick, thank you so much.
Thank you.
More information online at rickbritton.com.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.